From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, sitting in for John Horn. On today's show, the Fox Network must decide whether to renew Empire for another season, and if they do, whether to bring back actor Jesse Smollett. And then, Esperanza Spalding is a four-time Grammy winner who's worked with jazz legends and performed at the White House. But she didn't choose her instrument to seek out the spotlight.
I love to be the bass player. I love it when it's not my gig. I love it when it's not my music. I love it when all I have to do is just, like, hold it down.
All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, filling in today for John Horn. So there's still a lot we don't know about why actor Jesse Smollett was cleared of all charges in a bizarre criminal case involving an alleged hate crime. Here's a little of what Smollett had to say yesterday to reporters.
Now, I'd like nothing more than to just get back to work and move on with my life. But make no mistakes, I will always continue to fight for the justice, equality, and betterment of marginalized people everywhere. So again, thank you for all the support, thank you for faith, and thank you to God.
Was Smollett, as he claims, the victim of a crime or the mastermind of a hoax, as Cook County police still insist? We also don't know if he'll resume his role as Jamal Lyon in the Fox series Empire, or whether the show will even be renewed for a sixth season. To help us unpack what this all means for the show and for Fox, we called Variety's Will Thorne, who wrote about the hard decisions that now face the network and Empire's creative team.
They're in a bit of a sticky situation right now, because on the one hand, they could just, you know, welcome him back to the show with open arms and therefore believe the news coming out of Smollett's camp from his lawyer, from his family, which is that he's been completely exonerated and that's that, case closed, and he can move on with his life and with his career. But the problem that Fox TV has is that the authorities, namely the Cook County State Attorney's Office, even the mayor of Chicago and Chicago PD, are all saying that he's guilty, basically. They're saying that they dropped the charges partly because of his community service and partly because of the $10,000 bond which he agreed to pay to the city of Chicago. So Fox is in a tricky situation, because who do they believe there? I mean, you know, the best policy would probably be to wait, I would say. Wait until more facts about the case have come out.
Well, but how long can they wait? I mean, I would imagine there's some amount of pressure on Fox and the Empire team to make a decision soon on the fate of Jesse Smollett and his role in Empire.
Absolutely. There's a lot of pressure from, you know, not only from the court of public opinion, but from the authority figures who are discussing it, and from the figures in the entertainment industry like Ava DuVernay, among others, who've come out calling out the way that Chicago PD handled the case and the way that Smollett has sort of been vilified in the media. But, I mean, Empire hasn't been renewed for a season six technically yet. That
right.
Seems to be highly likely, given how important the show is in the cultural zeitgeist and given how big the show is for Fox. But in theory, they really should proceed quickly. But then what do they do? What, they're in this situation where they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, really. So, I mean, I would say that waiting is probably the only option that they do have. And, of course, he is an essential character on the show, but they already wrote him out of the final two episodes of season five. So they could just write him out of essential season six as well. That doesn't seem to be a huge step for them. But then if they do that, then that could lead to a huge backlash on social media and with people who are, you know, defending Smollett and criticizing the way the case has been handled overall.
Well, without giving anything away, do we have any idea how the writing team dealt with the absence of Jesse Smollett's character in Empire?
Well, for the last two episodes, they just kind of sidetracked his character and his storyline. Is pretty essential to the Lyon family overall, and he's one of the mainstays of the Lyon family on Empire. But realistically, they could get rid of him and write him out, and the show would probably survive pretty well afterwards.
In the short term, Will, is it possible to measure the impact on Empire's ratings since the initial incident and subsequent scandal broke?
Well, the last two episodes of Empire, or the two that have aired since the whole Smollett affair snowballed, have been two of the lowest rated in the show's history. The previous episode was the lowest rated episode in Empire's five-season run. So you could take that as an indication that people are tuning out from the show because of the Smollett affair. Although, on the other hand, you could also argue that these last two episodes were the mid-season premiere and the episode subsequent to that. So ratings are probably going to be lower around that time anyway, but not historically this low.
And give us a sense of what the response has been from Empire creator and showrunner Lee Daniels and the creative team at large since the charges were dropped yesterday.
In terms of the Empire team, the most vocal response has been from Jussie Smollett's co-star Taraji P. Henson, who said it was such a relief that the truth had finally come out and that she was celebrating this sort of joyous victory, taking the Smollett camp sort of line, that this was it, that, you know, he's vindicated, that's it, you know, he's been exonerated. in terms of the creatives of the show, there hasn't been that much comment. Lee Daniels released a video on his Instagram a few days ago detailing precisely sort of how traumatic the whole experience had been for him and for the other creatives on the show and for the cast and crew. And so, you know, the statement from the Chicago mayor and from the police department, it would seem this affair is probably far from over, and people are still going to be digging into exactly what happened in the early hours of January 29th for quite some time, I think.
Fox will likely wait until this season is wrapped up before deciding whether or not to renew the series. And then there's this complication that the network no longer owns the production company that launched Empire. It went to Disney as part of this massive sale. So what happens if Fox renews the series, but Disney no longer wants to produce it?
That's another possible eventuality. You know, 20th Century Fox TV now belongs to Disney, and the company that makes Empire now belongs to Disney. And of course, there's a Disney who are historically a family-friendly property trying to avoid as much scandal as possible in their TV shows, you know, in their network history with ABC. You could see the possibility that if this affair snowballs even more into larger proportions, even though Fox the network would likely want the show to be renewed pretty strongly for a sixth season, you could see the possible eventuality where Disney say, no, this is too controversial for us, this is against our company's values, etc., and they might pull the plug. You could see that happening as well.
I'm curious about the fans of Empire and what we're hearing from them since yesterday. And this is such an unknown, but how might they fall down on this if he is either cut from the show or stays on the show?
For the most part, people are standing behind him if they're really a fan of the show. Especially, I mean, if you take Ava DuVernay's comments, for example, she herself is a big fan of the show and has hinted at the potentially checkered history of the Chicago Police Department in dealing with these large cases, in dealing with hate crimes, in dealing with racial issues in the past. And so I've seen a lot of fans of Empire take that route on social media and be skeptical of, you know, what anything that the authorities, especially the Chicago Police Department, have been saying about this. I think regardless of whether Smollett's character is cut out of the show, they will continue to support the show. I think if he is cut out, there will be a backlash to a certain extent. But at the end of the day, given that his character is he's a big part of the show, but he's not entirely essential, and the Lyon family will probably still be on screen afterwards, I don't foresee it being a huge, huge deal for them.
Will Thorne writes about television for Variety. Will, thanks so much.
Great. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Coming up on The Frame, Esperanza Spalding explores the healing power of music on her latest record. This is The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas. John Horn is away today. Thanks for joining us. When Grammy-winning musician and composer Esperanza Spalding dropped by The Frame studio last week, she wore her trademark white jumpsuit, emblazoned in giant black letters with the words Life Force. And as you'll hear, it's a pretty good description for who she is as a musician and as a person. Spalding is a bassist, a singer, and a Harvard professor. Her music typically gets filed under jazz, but she also adds elements of hip-hop, R&B, and even hints of prog rock. She challenges herself and her audience in other ways, too. Her 2017 album, Exposure, was written and recorded in 77 hours and was live-streamed on Facebook. Spalding's latest, 12 Little Spells, is a collection of 12 songs, each corresponding to a different body part. When she joined me in studio, we started with what inspired the album's concept.
Truthfully, I don't know how the idea came up. Like many ideas I've had for projects, it kind of like, blank, it enters the imagination all at once. I thought of the name, 12 Little Spells. I thought, oh yeah, there'll be spells that have like an effect on the body part. That's the theme, that's the concept. Mm. When the inspiration came, I didn't know what it was from. I just thought that's what I wanted to do. And then looking back and being asked that question a lot, I realized that actually it was probably the fruit of just absorbing a lot of information about the relationship between music and healing and our nervous system and emotional trauma, psychological trauma, and sort of my own process of realizing that I'm really passionate about studying the field, if it's a field, of performing arts as public health. And it was kind of an aha moment when I realized that there is a lot of literature and research already about how what I do can, you know, with intention and practice, have measurable according to science effects on our bodies, on our anatomical experience of the world. There was a lot that went into this project, and I feel like it's been like a pivot point for me and an opening into like the next level, I guess, of my adventure.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, let's hear something from 12 Little Spells. This is Mouth, which is represented with the song to tide us over.
Okay.
So Esperanza, as we're listening to that, you're kind of swaying back and forth and your eyes are closed.
I was just remembering how amazing it felt when I first heard that beat that Justin Tyson created. This was a very, I want to say, collaborative project in terms of how each spell was put together. And I was in Italy at an artist residency, Hallelujah. I never understood what those were for, but now I totally get what they're for. I was like, why do you want to step away from your life to make art? Like, art happens in the here and now, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, oh, wow, I get it. Like, I get it. Right. I get what space can do for creation. Anyway, and he sent that track. And it was just a track. It didn't have a melody. And I asked if he could, you know, what came up for him when he was thinking about the mouth and what this spell is intended to do for the mouth and for us mouth havers. And I'm just remembering that moment when I first hit play, and I was like, damn, this is so in there. It's so in there. And it's a little disjointed, like it's staggering. The beat itself, like it actually is just in four. There's nothing really tricky about it, but you hear a sort of like staggering, slightly jolted thing. Rising up. Part of the idea with this song and the intended effect of this spell on the mouth is the power of just communicating and letting out what's in you, you know. And sometimes by the process of just starting to speak it, we discover more than we knew, you know, mm-hmm. and we start to feel more than we knew we felt.
You were partly inspired in making this record by the practice of Reiki, which is a Japanese metaphysical healing practice and involving the hands. Could you elaborate a little bit for those who don't know what it is?
I think historians of Reiki would say that, like, the word Reiki is Japanese, and the practitioner that really brought it into this era or rediscovered it and, like, made a way into it in this era was a Japanese man. Mm-hmm. But the healing practice, the healing art that the word Reiki describes is much older. Mm-hmm. Than Japan as a nation.
I didn't know that. Okay.
It's much older than its like rediscovery point. Studies have shown that it does regulate your heart. It lowers your blood pressure and it releases tension. Mm. It relieves tension and hypertension. So those are like some things I guess we know at this time. But the same way that maybe 1,000 years ago, nobody could show what music was physically doing in your cochlea. Nobody could show you and prove that this over here has traveled through sound waves and has made a little bone vibrate a little drum that then turns a sack of fluid into electrical currents. And after it leaves your cochlea, it's just electricity running through your brain, but you perceive it as a sound. Mm-hmm. And if I do it in rhythm, you're going to hear it as a beat. And if I move some more air with my vocal cords, you'll start hearing something. And I can even do things to make you hear a harmonic progression. What really matters, though, is that you experience it. I can't describe to you what music is.
Right.
What it feels like to live music. And I think Reiki is similar. It's an experiential art. And I was fortunate to have some really heavy-duty Reiki experiences. Coming from Oregon, I feel like I have sort of a natural aversion to what I call woo-woo things mm-hmm. because I am such a scientist at heart. Like, I want the empirical data. I don't want you to just tell me it's a feeling. Like, I want to know what's happening in my body. That being said, I had some heavy-duty experiences, and I don't do drugs other than Tylenol sometimes and caffeine. Anyway, I had some deep experiences that defied my ability to explain them away.
Could you describe?
I don't think so. They didn't even happen at, like, a describable level, I guess. I was seeing things and... It was just a lot of sensations that were very visceral and tangible. And I didn't feel like I was being manipulated. Like, I didn't feel like I was within an illusion. So I think that's the most that I feel qualified to say, because I've only been doing Reiki for a little over a year.
Oh, okay.
I'm studying it deeply, though, and I have three great teachers, three great guides, and I practice it regularly. And I think one day there'll be more scientific data around what it does. But I guess the same way that music came to me, came into my life, when I heard it, I knew that it was for me and that I was for it. And I had that experience with Reiki. It was like an undeniable experience that I can't necessarily explain, but I knew that there was something to be developed there, you know?
Well, these are themes that you you touched on a little bit in this commencement speech you gave at the Brooklyn School of Music last year about music as like a spiritual force, a healing force. And I want to play a little clip from that speech, and then we can talk about it.
Okay.
The thing we're dealing in, the capital that we exchange when we give a concert or have a therapy session, is the one thing that can't be explained. So I just want to remind you to make room for spirit, make room for the truth, and remember that you are the chosen vessels this time around, and that's how serious it is. And also have fun. Congratulations.
Well, that's my guest, Esperanza Spalding, who's laughing at me right now.
No, I'm laughing at myself. I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing at me. Yeah.
Tell me about that day of giving that commencement speech at Berklee School of Music.
Oh, God. Yeah. I was asked to give a commencement speech, and I didn't want to do it. I just was nervous to be asked to do that. And I feel like many times because I check a lot of boxes for some major institutions as like a woman of color, and
we should say you're a graduate of
Berklee. I graduated, and that day I was getting my honorary doctorate from Berklee too, which is not good for anything in the world, but other than, I don't know, I have a cool hat, but and I felt like y'all shouldn't have asked me to do that. Like, that looks good on paper, but I don't know that I have what the students need, you know. But then that translated later as like, oh, you're just being a wimp. So I said yes. And then I kind of decided that if they asked me to do it, I had to come as me. I had to go do what I do for these young people, which is my belief in this, I guess, system of engaging with the world, which some people call jazz, some people call improvisation. But essentially, it's showing up in the present, trusting everything that you've practiced, which includes everything that you've lived, studied, learned, failed at, won at. It's trusting your practice and responding in real time to what's actually happening. So like, that probably is not the best speech I've ever given, but that's not the point. To me, it's still better than coming canned.
Right.
And I'm not good at that anyway. So it's like playing to my strengths and also trying to model for the students an option of how you can engage with the world around you.
Coming up on The Frame, more with musician and singer Esperanza Spalding. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, in today for John Horn. And now, back to my conversation with composer, singer, and bassist Esperanza Spalding. We've been talking about her latest album, 12 Little Spells, a project inspired by an alternative healing technique called Reiki. After her 2012 album, Radio Music Society, Spalding's music took a turn away from more traditional modern jazz and neo-soul into more experimental territory. There were other big changes, too.
I fired my manager and I left my agent, and I just was a side person for a while, and I was just studying, and I had to go back to square one of all the things that made me want to do this stuff in the first place, which is like listening and figuring it out and writing stuff and playing with people and all those things that are really nourishing. And it felt like the way my quote unquote career was going, there was the least time for that stuff, which to me is the stuff that makes me want to do it in the first place. It's not to go do shows. So that's what those 2 years were. And in those 2 years, I remember I was on a gig with Jerry Allen, God rest her soul, and Terry Lynn Carrington. We were in Austin, and it like hit me like, again, those like hits of inspiration in the middle of the night. I just like her, this character, and I saw her and I felt her and I heard the music. I heard the sound. I knew the instrumentation. I was like, oh, okay, there's some music that's erupting. The first song of the album's Good Lava. There's like something in here that I just need, now it's time to let it out.
You're talking about the character Emily?
Yeah.
From
Emily's D plus Evolution.
See this pretty girl, watch this pretty girl flow.
So that's Good Lava from Emily's D plus Evolution. Mm-hmm. That's a marked change from where you were like in 2012 to when that came out in 2016. That's
from the outside.
Yeah.
I mean, from where I sit, which only I know where that is, it was very logical. It was just like letting out more of the nest that is my musical DNA, I guess. But there was so much invested in advertising and promoting me as a jazz musician,
yeah,
that I can see why from another outside perspective that seemed like a marked shift. But you know, I don't keep track of how many times people are signifying me as a jazz musician.
Mm-hmm.
I can't keep track of that. My manager and agent and just promoters at the time saw like an angle. So I get it. It's just, it feels diminishing sometimes.
So where do they put you in record stores these days?
Those that are still in existence. Probably in jazz.
Yeah. You started playing music at a very young age and picked up a number of different instruments, eventually settling on upright bass early on. What was it about that instrument that really spoke to you?
I think that for me personally, that instrument is healing to me.
Mm.
And the function of what the instrument does in the band feels really good for my personality type and the way that I like to be in general. I'm also starting to feel like, this is going to sound a little, I don't know. It's like the mother of the band. I struggled with my relationship with my mother. And in the dynamic of being in the ensemble, where you stand, you're standing next to like the parents of the band. It's the drums and the bass and the piano. You're the rhythm section. What does that mean? It means you're the constant that's just there that everybody leans back into while they like explore space and try and fail and go and do this. And you're just this like steady constant and you're responding, but you're also keeping everything going. And the horn players or the frontline players, it only works because they trust that you're holding it down.
Right.
And I think for me, because like my home life was very chaotic, that role felt really good to me. All I had to do, like I know that like this feels good to me. I'm just boom, boom, boom. Like I'm the ground. It's solid. I don't have to do anything if I don't want. My solo can just be quarter notes marking the time, or I can lay out and like y'all do all the go all over the place and do the craziness. But really, like I said, after many, many years of wondering why the hell I chose this instrument, I think it's the sound first and foremost, and it's the function. I love that function. I love to be the bass player. I love it when it's not my gig. I love it when it's not my music. I love it when all I have to do is just like hold it down. I love that. I love it. It's very nourishing, and it's a nice relief from all the like blah, blah, of being in the front.
Mm-hmm. Well, to close out, Esperanza, I'd like to put you on the spot and make you be the DJ. can you choose a song from Spells to close us out and say a little something about it?
I would like to do The Legs, which is called Readying to Rise.
You figured out so much up there on your own, now let us step in.
The intended effect of this spell is to remember how everything you've been through is accumulated in your life. And sometimes when we're like working towards a goal and it seems like we're not there yet, it's so easy to forget the progress that we've made because we can't help it because we're living and it's accumulative by nature. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun if, like, you could get a report, like a map of everywhere your legs had been, because they remember every step you took and every time you sat and every time you walked and every time you stood and every time you walked with someone. Like, they have the full account of everything you've ever done. You know, you get from here to there by taking steps, and your legs know that.
We walk the largest muscle groups and come up
against it. It's Esperanza Spalding. Her latest record is 12 Little Spells. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Esperanza Spalding will perform on April 27th at the Ford Amphitheater as part of a quartet that includes legendary drummer Jack DeJohnette. And that's the show for today. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us at The Frame. Thanks for listening. I'm Stephen Cuevas. See you tomorrow. Walking.